And a second and goal for Green Bay. Fake to Jones. Rodgers looking around, firing. End zone caught for the touchdown. It's Tonyan.
Game sound from Fox's broadcast of the Packers' January 3rd win over the Bears. With that win, they clinched the top seed in the NFC and a first week bye in the playoffs. They take on the Los Angeles Rams Saturday at Lambeau. Forecast says a high of 34 with a COVID pod seating system. We have a preview on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. How did the Packers look headed into the playoffs? How has COVID affected your Packers season? 800-642-1234. Olivia Reiner is a sports multimedia reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Olivia, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me. It's great to chat with you again.
Well, the Pack is going into this 13-3, matching their regular season record from last year. But, you know, there's nothing regular about this season. What do they look like amid the pandemic?
No, there's truly nothing regular about the season, and we'll talk about that at length today. But first of all, the Packers have been performing really well this season. As you mentioned, they're 13-3 for the second consecutive season under head coach Matt LaFleur. However, this year, 13-3 looks a lot different for this team. This offense under LaFleur's second year has looked a lot stronger, a lot more comfortable, and a lot more efficient. They're the number one scoring offense in the league, and they're fifth in yards this season. Quarterback Aaron Rodgers is having a really remarkable year. He's thrown for 48 touchdowns, and that's a career high for him. 18 of those touchdown passes have gone to wide receiver Devontae Adams, who's also having a remarkable year. That 18 touchdowns for Adams ties a franchise record, and he's missed two games this season. So this offense has absolutely been flying high heading into the playoffs.
Why is Aaron Rodgers connecting more? Why is he playing better?
We're seeing him more comfortable in this offense in year two. And not just Rodgers, we're also seeing everybody else around him a lot more comfortable as well. The receivers, as I mentioned, Adams having a really good year. But there's also, you know, tight end Robert Tonyan has emerged as the second wide receiver. There was a lot of discussion heading into this season. Who is the second best wide receiver on this team? Well, it's turned out to be perhaps a tight end. In Tonyan, he has 11 touchdowns this season, which also ties a single season franchise record among tight ends. So he's been performing really well. And then the play of the offensive line has also been really strong too. They've been remarkable, not only in run blocking and opening up lanes in the running game for running backs Aaron Jones, Jamal Williams, and A.J. Dillon, but they've also been really successful in keeping Aaron Rodgers clean in the pocket.
We're previewing the Packers versus the Rams on Saturday with Olivia Reiner, sports multimedia reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You can join in. How do you feel about the Pack ahead of their playoff game? What are you watching for? What do you think will be the keys to winning the game? 800-642-1234. So, you know, Packers coach Matt LaFleur said yesterday, it's a blessing and a curse to coach against his great friend, the Rams' head coach, Sean McVay. So the coaches hold each other in high esteem, it seems. What do McVay and his Rams look like?
This is a really, really strong team, and I'm really looking forward to this matchup this weekend, especially between the Packers' number one offense and the Rams' number one defense, one of the absolute, objectively, the best defense in the league, and they have a number of really talented players. Defensive lineman Aaron Donald is one of the best pass rushers in the league. He has 13 and a half sacks this season, which is second in the NFL. And then cornerback Jalen Ramsey is an all-pro this year, and he's speculated to be going up against Packers wide receiver Devontae Adams, another all-pro. And as we already have discussed, Devontae Adams has had a really strong season as well. So Ramsey has had some success against some of the most talented wide receivers in the league, including Seattle Seahawks wide receiver DK Metcalf this past weekend in the wild card round. And Ramsey was able to hold him to under 100 receiving yards, which is a pretty impressive feat. So, Wow. Yeah, I think those are going to be some key matchups to keep an eye on.
Well, how might the Pack try to exploit the Rams' weaknesses?
Well, the Rams, if they have any weaknesses, it's probably on offense right now. Their offense is not as strong as their defense is, and their quarterback has just been playing okay in Jared Goff. And on top of that, he has a right thumb injury, which actually kept him sidelined from the game this past weekend, and backup quarterback John Wolford had to start. However, during the game, Wolford got hurt and he had to leave the game, forcing Goff to come in. So both of them are injured right now. It looks like Goff is going to be healthy enough to start this upcoming weekend. However, we'll see if he's truly ready to go. You never know. We'll be keeping an eye on that as every waking moment passes leading up to Saturday.
Will you be at Lambeau?
I will be at Lambeau. I'm looking forward to it. This is going to be the first time this season that actual fans, I suppose, will be in the stands. The Packers have had first responders and their families in the stands for the last several games of the regular season. However, now they're allowing some season ticket holders to come in and watch the game. So there's supposed to be about 6,000 fans in the stands this weekend. So it should be a little bit different of an environment, still not nearly as loud and rambunctious as it typically would be during the regular season and seasons past. However, a little bit of an added boost to the crowd for the players. It should be, I'm looking forward to seeing some faces out there.
Yeah. I wonder if home field advantage will play out here without, packed stadium and the noise of Lambeau.
It's a great question. I'm not really sure. I think home field advantage might play a bigger role if the weather were to be a bit colder.
Right.
It sounds like it's going to be quite warm. Balmy
for Wisconsin. Yeah.
Exactly. I'm sure the Packers wish there was a little bit more snow in the forecast this weekend. It would help them quite a bit with the Rams coming to town. However, listen, 25 to 30 degree weather, it's going to be different for the Rams. I think it's a high of 80 out in LA on Saturday. So, hey, that's different enough.
Yeah. And so you're going to see, as you mentioned, thousands of fans. There's also invited first responders, 300 Rams fans, Packers employees, players, coaches, families. This is amounting to thousands of people in Lambeau, and we're watching cases rise of COVID. How do you feel about that juxtaposition?
Yes, there's definitely some dissonance. And I feel like all season it's felt like this, it's great. I'm happy to be covering football. I'm happy that the Green Bay Packers are working, but at the same time, we're in the middle of a global pandemic and it's serious. And the NFL plays a role in whether or not these cases continue to spread, whether it's within their own organizations or outside of their organizations. And we don't even know how many cases have multiplied or spread because of the NFL outside of its organization. So, they're doing everything they can in terms of encouraging fans to wear masks, mandatory inside of the stadium, but it's definitely going to be interesting. And yes, it's definitely certainly still a concern, especially for this team.
Let's bring in Mike in Milwaukee. Hi, Mike. Hi, are you there, Mike?
Hello, hi. How are you doing?
Go ahead, yeah.
Well, I had kind of an off-the-wall question. As I told your screener, I'm an old guy, 74 years old, and a bunch of us old guys were talking, and Aaron Rodgers is the key this year to the Packers. I mean, he's just playing like he hasn't played in years, and his passing, his running, his strength, his ability to, just create plays. And he said he's concentrated on football, and laughingly, jokingly, we wondered if any of this had to do with the fact that he broke up with his girlfriend, Danica. And he's concentrated his whole life right now on one thing, football. He's totally focused on one thing. And jokingly, but maybe there is a little bit of something there, he has dedicated his life to football. Wonder if there's any connection.
All right, Olivia, bringing a bit of his personal life in there and his focus.
Yeah, I can't pretend to know what goes on in Aaron Rodgers' personal life, but he has said that this offseason he has focused more on himself, become more at peace with himself, more appreciative of things in his life. Hasn't gone into so much detail about what that is, and has declined to go into detail for that matter, but he's brought it up multiple times that he's happy and he's more appreciative of the things in his life right now, and thus he's more appreciative of the football season.
Milwaukee Journal Sentinel sports reporter Olivia Reiner with us on the Pack and how the rest of the NFL has handled the pandemic. We want to know about lessons learned in the sports world globally, youth sports too. How have your favorite sports been affected? Are you a coach? How have you tried to keep your team safe? What's worked? What did you need to change? Could you avoid outbreaks? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're looking at how the sports world adjusted as COVID continues to spread. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The pandemic shut down sports for months, and then leagues started writing their detailed manuals for health and safety protocols. The NBA created a bubble at Walt Disney World to prevent players and personnel from contracting COVID. How do you feel about pro sports playing in stadiums with or without fans? Should sports be played amid the health crisis? Is it worth it? 800-642-1234. Milwaukee Journal Sentinel sports reporter Olivia Reiner stays with us. And Tim Bannon is here, an O'Brien Fellow in Public Service Journalism at Marquette University, where he's investigating the safety of youth sports, including the pandemic response. Tim, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
We also have Lee Eagle, who is a clinical professor at New York University's Tisch Institute for Global Sport. Lee, welcome back.
Hi, good morning. Good to be with you.
Well, let's start with you, Lee. The NFL is nearing the end of its first season amid COVID. How well has the league handled the pandemic?
Well, the NFL is coming near the end, getting into Super Bowl season. I don't think that's a secret to anyone up there in Wisconsin. And the league has generally done a good job of managing the pandemic and managing teams. We can get into a little bit, I'm sure, the nuances of it, because there have been certainly some cases, individual cases. There have been some cases where COVID has ripped through some teams. And there have been, for as many players and staff who are doing a good job of keeping safe, there's some who are taking some liberties.
So when the circumstances, when COVID has ripped through teams, what has gone on there? Where has the breakdown been?
Well, the breakdown is, you know, it's sports is a reflection of society. So, you know, things that we see in our communities are happening in football teams, same kind of way, people getting lax about doing the three things that we know work, hand washing, wearing a mask, and social distancing.
Tim, when you look at pro leagues, how are youth athletic leagues handling the pandemic? What do you see?
Well, there are many, many major differences. One, of course, is that the pros and colleges to some degree, including the Power Five conferences, they can afford to test frequently. They can control their players. In some cases, they create bubbles. When you move down the hierarchy of sports, you get into youth sports. And by the way, nonprofit youth sports is a $19 billion industry. So there is still a financial incentive for there to proceed. But they don't test. They can't test. And there's a real patchwork of regulations across the country. In fact, if you look at the Midwest, Illinois is still on pause for all youth sports. Wisconsin or Michigan and Minnesota, they're just resuming. And Wisconsin, they're just getting going now in most of the state, except for Milwaukee and Dane County, which are basically on pause. So in youth sports, it's just there's not much money for testing, and there's just a real checkerboard of rules.
A checkerboard of rules, and so you have perhaps quite uneven, you see uneven application of how a particular sport would proceed at the youth level?
Absolutely. We, if you go back to May and June, when college sports had been canceled and pro sports were still struggling to get going, youth sports was powering ahead with thousands of tournaments across the country. These are travel and club teams. We went out to tournaments across the Midwest to see how they're managing this. And it turns out that there's different rules in every state, every tournament, sometimes different rules within the same complex.
Wow.
And our findings were basically three things. One, the rules vary. Two, the regulation is quite spotty. And three, adherence to the rules is also fairly spotty. So it's continued through the summer and through the fall. Winter sports are a whole different ballgame because it's indoors. But again, it's just this lack of regulation and this disconnect of protocols.
Olivia, how often are Packers players and coaches personnel being tested for COVID?
They get tested every single day. And actually, it's not just the Packers players and coaches. It's certain staff members as well, and also certain media members. There was a period of time where I was getting tested every day just because of the fact that I was being allowed into the building. In order to be in the building and work out of Lambeau Field, we have an office there, I had to get tested every day. And that actually ended maybe about a month or two ago. But yeah, you get tested a PCR test every day. Those results will come back in a little bit less than 24 hours. And then that's when the team will be able to make the determination if a player or a coach can enter the facility the next day. So that test, the test on one day is being used to make the decision the following day of whether or not a player can enter the facility, practice. So there is a bit of a delay and an opportunity for, you know, a potentially positive player or coach to enter the facility, which is why they have, you know, these mask regulations, social distancing guidelines in place. So there definitely is a little bit of room for error if not all the rules are followed by players and coaches.
Lee, is there enough testing going on in sports? As you look at the wide world of sports, what do you see for testing protocols?
Well, I think what you're hearing already this morning is there is a wide range going on, and at the professional levels, certainly the top tiers in places across the world, there is enough testing because we can tell exactly when test comes back positive versus negative, and which players are in, which players are out, which teams have enough players to play. But as you go sort of further down that pyramid, the sports pyramid, and get into the collegiate ranks, into youth, as Tim was just talking about, there is surely not enough testing.
When you look at the whole bubble formula, creating a bubble around players, coaches, personnel, and not letting others in, how has that bubble formula approach worked?
Yeah, the bubbles have worked really quite well, and a lot of what we're seeing now, by the way, in the leagues across the United States and really across the world, you can look into places like the Premier League in England. What they've done is sort of create sort of like a pseudo bubble, so everybody's pretty well monitored. And we know who is sort of cheating the system, who's keeping up with it. But there's no question that the bubbles, the NBA had a bubble last season. The NHL had a bubble last season. Major League Baseball did not. NFL has not. And Major League Soccer created one as well. The bubbles worked. And players, staff, and anybody else who was inside that bubble was really sealed up in it for better and worse, but everybody seemed to keep pretty healthy, and anybody who literally crossed the line of that bubble was out. So those bubbles work.
Tim, of course, no bubble at youth level sports. You know, what is the primary driver then to stop an outbreak?
Well, that's a very good question, I think. So as we've moved into winter sports, which everyone agrees is much riskier than outdoor sports when it comes to the transmission of the coronavirus. And a lot of people are trying to make tough decisions about whether their kids should play, whether their team should play, whether their school should play. But there's really a lack of data, enough good data to make good decisions. That's why you see all these different decisions. And the number one unknown is how and if these student athletes are contributing to community spread. The problem is that most young people are asymptomatic when they get COVID. And there was a study that came out last week that showed that 59% of all people who transmit COVID were asymptomatic. So these kids may pick it up. on the rink, on the court, in the locker room, on the way to and from the games. But unless there's unless they get symptoms, they're not going to get tested. So there's no way to know if they are beginning the spread out into the community. So I don't know that we're ever going to find that out. And some of the repercussions of continuing sports may not be known for years to come as people try to figure out COVID, which is a very wily virus.
Tim Bannon there, a public service journalism fellow at Marquette, formerly a Chicago Tribune editor. Lee Eagle is a clinical professor at NYU's Tisch Institute for Global Sport. And Olivia Reiner covers the Packers in the NFL at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Are you a college or pro athlete? Maybe you play varsity sports. What's your status? How do you feel about balancing play with testing and staying safe? 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update. Stay with us. More conversation on the Ideas Network. We're at the intersection of COVID and the sports world here in the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The pandemic era is dramatically changing sports. Some stadiums are now being used for vaccine distribution. Some leagues, as we've been talking about, have operated in bubbles without fans. And the Pack will take on the Rams Saturday with roughly 8,000 people together in Lambeau. Should sports forge ahead as COVID surges? How does it feel not to tailgate ahead of a Packers game? It's 800-642-1234. Lee Eagle is at NYU's Tisch Institute for Global Sport. Tim Bannon is a Marquette University Public Service Journalism Fellow investigating the safety of nonprofit youth sports. And Olivia Reiner covers pro sports for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Olivia, will it work with fans being allowed at Packers games this game and this whole pod system?
Yes, so they're making sure that, as they have since they started allowing healthcare workers and first responders into the stadium a few weeks ago, they made sure that all the families were staying within their own little area of each section of the stadium. So making sure that they're all wearing masks and staying socially distant from other pods. So now there's going to be more of them, more fans, more people in the stands. They're going to be taking up a bigger area of the stadium, but still the same rules will apply, making sure that these households are sort of staying within the same area of the stadium.
And so how do you know that in that pod, all of those are family members, or, you know, is it just, how does that work?
I'm not really sure. I think that the way that they're ticketing them, so none of these tickets are open just to anybody, and there's no resale market for these tickets. The fans that are being allowed in are all season ticket holders, and they had to express their interest, I think, months ago. So when the email went out, you know, this is how you can go buy your tickets. I suppose they're going by some sort of honor system that these are your families that you're with, your household. So besides that, I am not entirely sure. I don't know if those rules can be bent.
Lee, should fans be allowed to attend games in stadiums amid this pandemic?
Well, you've asked the multi-billion-dollar question, or one of the multi-billion-dollar questions. It's yes and no. So really, one of the things about the pods that you were just speaking to is it really depends on what protocols are in place. And for the most part, you know, Arlington, Texas has really been a model in this area. Can I mention the Dallas Cowboys for a moment on this?
Carry on.
Okay, that's the only
in the context of learning something, yes.
okay, fair enough. So, you know, they've had 20,000 fans at Cowboys games. I guess it's okay, by the way, since the Cowboys didn't advance all that far this season. But and there they did it safely. They had the world, they held Major League Baseball playoffs and the World Series. They've hosted a bunch of high school graduations and some football games. So there are examples out there of fans going to stadiums and things being okay. There's certainly some examples of it in other places around the world. Meanwhile, you know, the COVID rates are surging. So it's a yes and no. My concern, and the concern for a lot of people, is not actually what happens once people are in these pods and inside the stadium. The larger concern is what's going on before and after. So everything, you know, the leagues, the teams, they've all been really good in terms of keeping tabs on who's coming in, who's going out. I would say one kind of difference between things in the U.S. and some other places that we look at around the world is how you go about getting your tickets is a little different. So in places like in England, the club model there, they've got a real sense of who holds the ticket. They know who's coming in, who's coming out, and you know, you can't trade your ticket, these sorts of things, even before the pandemic. Some of those kinds of policies and protocols have slid over to the U.S. during the pandemic. But it's really, again, what's going on before? Where are people at? What are they doing before they even get to that stadium? What are they doing after? There's the problem for spread.
Yeah, you know, I wonder if we could look globally here for just a moment. I mean, in the pandemic months, our household, we watched a whole lot more international soccer that was suddenly broadcast on our major American networks. How did European soccer handle COVID? What has its governing body, FIFA, done in all of this?
Well, the first thing is that that international soccer, football, as they often remind us here in the States, shut down like we had here in the States. So there was a shutdown. It went for most part about 3 months, and then they started back up again. One of the things they were able to do was really create there were these bubble systems. And they had same kinds of things we saw here, matches held behind closed doors. So there was some kind of mix between they're sort of creating these bubbles, but it wasn't, it was a little bit different than what people here in the States saw with like the NBA or the NHL or Major League Soccer. But it was really all about managing players and staff, limiting the number of people coming in, again, being able to test players and staff, which is really a luxury that, of course, as you get into the next levels down in the sports pyramid, different age groups and as things go more recreational, just isn't being done.
Tim, back to you, you know, at those lower levels, in that recreational level as well, who's in charge of game conditions? Is it the schools? Is it local health offices? Is it the youth athletic leagues like the Wisconsin Interclassic Athletic Association? Who makes the calls here?
Well, it's a combination. The WIAA, the governing high school board in Wisconsin, they determine things like you must wear a mask while you're playing basketball, hockey, volleyball. But when it comes to who is in the stands at venues, what the protocols are about coming and going, that's often up to the venue itself, the rink or the court. But I think it's really important to be talking about this idea of what's happening beyond the field itself, in the stands, but also out in the community. The Packers put out a statement yesterday saying, I know you guys want to get together to watch the game Saturday, but please do it with your friends. Or if you're going to get together with friends, do it outside with a fire in the backyard. You look what happened in Tuscaloosa after Alabama crushed Ohio State. There were thousands and thousands of people celebrating in the street. So part of it also is what's happening well beyond that among hugely passionate fans who want to get together because, you know, sports is a religion in this country. And I think so. That's where I think people have to be careful. If you love sports, then please be careful, follow the rules.
Yeah, you know, calling off tailgating is easier said than done.
Absolutely. I think, you know, maybe not, it may not be tailgating in the back, in the parking lot at Lambeau, but they may be tailgating in their backyard or their alley or their driveway.
We're talking about sports amid COVID, and we have Tim Bannon there as well as Olivia Reiner, Lee Eagle. Olivia is a sports reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Tim is investigating the safety of youth sports for a Marquette University journalism fellow. And Lee is a clinical professor at NYU's Tisch Institute for Global Sport. Taking your insights on the sports world and how you see it, should they be on the field? 800-642-1234. So, Lee, you know, we saw leagues write these detailed manuals for health and safety protocols, more than, you know, some hundreds of pages long. Have these manuals been effective?
Great question, because what they run into is sort of things in two directions, going off in two directions. You know, good luck getting people to read 142 pages of health and safety protocols in any time. You know, the issue, I think, more was about translating that and communicating it among teams. So that's a different story. Because, you know, we all know, remember, athletes and staff, though they're heroes and villains, a lot of times, they're human beings. And human beings do well when there is a lot of simplicity. Right? We don't do well with a lot of details and directions and go this way, go that way, and the other. So those protocols were put in place. They were well thought through. It wasn't just a bunch of paper pushing. But really, like in so many things, translating that, communicating it, and getting people to convert it into action has been a whole different story altogether. And you can see there are really good examples of players and teams who have been following it, you know, pretty much to the T, and others who have just said, you know what, too much. This is just not for me. I'm not doing it. And we read about those examples, too.
Olivia, what is the effect here on Green Bay and these ticket sales? You know, how much do local ticket sales and the Packers playing in Green Bay affect the overall economy?
Well, it's bound to have somewhat of a positive effect, I would imagine. I just don't know exactly, you know, as we've discussed, the Packers are not encouraging fans to congregate for these, to watch these games. Before or after, there's no tailgating allowed before the game in the parking lots outside of Lambeau Field. So I don't know exactly if fans are coming from outside. Certainly there's season ticket holders all over the place. Perhaps they're staying at hotels before and after the game. So that could have an effect there. Inevitably, if people are traveling out of town to come to the game, then perhaps restaurants will see a spike there too. So there will be an added economic benefit to having even some degree of fans, because that for so long there has been absolutely nothing. And certainly a big chunk of the economy this time of year really thrives on having fans and people come to Lambeau Field as a destination, not only when there's games at Lambeau Field, but also on some of the days in the week when fans really just want to be at Lambeau. They want to see it. There are people who just come, drive up and want to take a picture outside of Lambeau Field or walk around in the atrium or walk around in the pro shop. So the Packers are going to get, and the Green Bay local economy is going to get a little bit of a boost just with the 6,000 added fans, but certainly pales in comparison to what they would typically be getting in a normal non-pandemic year.
Olivia Reiner covers the Packers in the NFL at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Tim Bannon, investigating youth sports as a Marquette Journalism Fellow. Lee Eagle is a clinical professor at NYU focused on global issues in sport. Join us as we debrief on what the sports world has learned amid COVID. Do you support the safety and health decisions your sports team or league has made over the months? Where do you take issue? What is your story as an athlete or fan? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation about the decisions made in the sports world as COVID cases continue to surge. Bubbles, piped in crowd noise, compressed seasons. What are lessons learned? What changes will stay with us post-pandemic? 800-642-1234. Tim Bannon is a Marquette Fellow studying youth sports. Lee Eagle is with NYU's Tisch Institute for Global Sport. And Olivia Reiner, a multimedia sports reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. They're with us for about 10 more minutes. We heard from Anne and Madison emailed wondering about Lambeau and the bathrooms. Anne worries that people are going to blow their noses in the bathrooms and cause a COVID hotbed. And Anne said, isn't everyone going to leave at the same time and be very near each other at the exits? Anne says this is an opportunity for virus spread. Olivia, what about the bathrooms and exits?
You know, I'm not entirely sure. I know that there is a capacity limit in the bathrooms, so that will be regulated. How many people are allowed inside of the bathroom at once, I'm not exactly sure. But yeah, I mean, if you're going, there's always going to be a little bit of room for risk, no matter how stringent the protocols are, regardless of whether or not people are social distancing. In the stadium, that's certainly one thing, in the bowl. But when you're entering and exiting, I think that is, I'm not sure how they're regulating that. But that,
and certainly
yeah,
concessions certainly, as well.
Exactly right. There's going to be lines for that as well. So, I mean, assuming that there will be some social distancing and there's going to be employees working and monitoring and making sure that groups and pods are adhering to those social distancing guidelines. But, you know, as with anything that we do in our lives these days, there's risk associated with it.
You know, Lee, people don't like to be micromanaged and have to follow these detailed procedures just to cheer on their team. But how do you handle these details like exits and bathrooms and concessions? Because there are myriad details.
There are, and there are certainly protocols and procedures in place at the venues. But as anybody who has ventured out into a supermarket, for example, knows, again, got human beings and what they do, how they behave, and what they actually do versus what they know they should do is a different story. So we will see in stadiums, Lambeau will definitely have social distancing procedures. I'm sure they've got crews that are in the bathrooms cleaning up all the time. So you'll see high levels of that for sure, especially in the major sports venues. One of the last things that a league or a team wants is a super spreader event. So rest assured you're going to see these sorts of things. But I actually think it's really upping the call for leagues and teams to have a chief health officer. And this isn't the medical advisory staff. Those are important professionals, usually sort of player and staff oriented. But this is sort of somebody who sits at a high level and oversees the interdisciplinary aspects of the team getting out on that field and how fans move around, interact, these sorts of things. It's a real area of need.
Well, I want to get to this vital question for all of you to answer. Should sports be allowed to continue during a global pandemic? And I want to ask this first to Tim at the youth level.
Well, that's a great question. I think it's, in many cases, it's a personal local decision. But, I think sports are important for young people. There was a University of Wisconsin health study that came out in September that showed that student athletes who were not participating in youth sports, team sports, were suffering.
Oops, I think we just lost Tim there. Tim, can you hear us?
I can hear you. Can you
okay,
hear me?
Okay, yeah, go ahead. There was just a pause.
There was
a pause on the field, yes.
A pause, right. There was a University of Wisconsin study that showed that student athletes who were sidelined because of the coronavirus are having higher degrees of depression and stress. So it's felt like it's important for them to be part of this community. So I think, if you can be safe, and if maybe no fans in these small arenas, everyone's wearing masks, as one epidemiologist told me, we're so close. We have this vaccine. Let's just be as safe as we can, get through the spring and summer, and get through the end of this tunnel, I think. But I think if we do it safely, it's probably worth it to these kids and these parents.
Olivia, this is your livelihood. You cover this day in and day out. Should sports be played amid the pandemic?
It's a great question, and it's such a complicated question because you're right. On one hand, yes, this is my livelihood, and if there were no football to cover, I don't really know what I would be doing with my life. But at the same time, where do you draw the line? You know, the league acknowledges that there's going to be positive cases. It's just a matter of not allowing those cases to spread. So, you know, where do they draw the line at the underlying effects that will linger to players that test positive? Luckily, at least that we know of, there hasn't been a player that, you know, no one has had a fatal experience with COVID-19. So, it's so complicated. But at the moment, you know, we've seen, especially, you know, with the Packers have handled this pretty well, despite being in at one point was a COVID-19 hotbed here in Green Bay. So, you know, as long as people can do this safely and players understood the risks to some extent, players had the opportunity to opt out if they weren't comfortable playing this season, if they were going to be at high risk of contracting the disease, they were able to be compensated for opting out. It's complicated, and I go back and forth on it every single day.
Lee, your thoughts?
So sports during the pandemic is considered non-essential. That doesn't mean that sports isn't vital. And we talked earlier about economic impact. There's a massive social impact in our communities through sport and because of sport. And sports can certainly, especially at the professional and elite level, be a model for people in communities. So athletes have an incredible platform to get messages out. They should be modeling good behavior, social distancing, hand washing, mask wearing, and as long as it can be done safely and without paying lip service to that and then moving on and doing what people want to do. But as long as it can be done safely, play on.
Well, we only have, half 30 seconds left or so. But Lee, what will stay with us in the post-pandemic era of sports? Are there some things that we're doing now that will continue?
There are. And I think probably my candidate for the most enduring thing is NBA Commissioner Adam Silver announcing that the league was going to shut down back in March. And, within 24, 36 hours, leagues around the country and then around the world started shutting down. Most important is people in communities across the country and across the world started to take this virus very seriously. This was not just, you know, sort of a bout of the flu. Yeah. There was something more serious here, and it took sports to really send that message. If the NBA was going to shut down, oh my goodness, this thing was real. I think that's the enduring sort of piece that we need to hold on to, and the rest of it falls out to everything that's discussed here about life in our new normal.
Well, Lee, Tim, Olivia, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you.
Olivia Reiner, sports multimedia reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Tim Bannon, an O'Brien Fellow in Public Service Journalism at Marquette, and Lee Eagle, clinical professor at NYU's Tisch Institute for Global Sport. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.